Chapter 4.
Ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Crazy Legs pulled the front door of his house shut, donning his hurricane jacket as he joined Mick on the steps. Together, they hopped to the lawn, skipping the bothersome steps in between, and jogged across the empty driveway to Elm Street. Only when they passed the adjacent spruce lane to their left did they slow to a walk, glancing down toward Jeff's house with vague curiosity. Not since Jeff's tragic stairwell plunge had either hurricane seen his leader, but they knew his absence was soon to end, for it was his phone call that prompted their venture in the first place. Continuing northward, they soon crossed Arrow Drive, a long hilly road that separated hurricane territory from tornado grounds at points farther east. The land directly across the street from them was considered neutral turf by both gangs, rising from the small golden field before them to a triangular section of woods spanning a square mile that separated both neighborhoods from the upper plaza. At the far end of the golden field, a familiar dirt path divided a pair of forsythia bushes before winding into the outskirts of the woods, where young poplar trees stood only as tall as the two boys. The farther they hiked into the woods, the more the sunlight dimmed, obscured by colorful foliage of taller oak and maple trees overhead. Deeper into the woods, they came upon a clearing covered with fallen cones and needles deposited by the tallest tree in the woods, a landmark pine dubbed Mr. Big by the gang, where their present path intersected with four other pathways. The main path continued past the giant tree, following a ridge atop the sloping forest bed toward the rear of the upper plaza, while a thinner trail jutted off to the right, running downhill across a stormwater gully before rising on the other bank into the thick brush near the edge of tornado territory. A well-worn path rose behind their left shoulder toward an elevated clearing known as Bobcat Hill, offering a panoramic view overlooking Salisbury High School, parts of Hurricane Territory, and the lower plaza. Lastly, a rabbit path barely discernible cut back at an acute angle toward Arrow Drive, down the hillside slope toward the deepest end of the rainwater gully. The two boys turned sharply onto the rabbit path, holding their arms overhead to avoid contact with the prickly bushes on either side. The path wound down to a long fallen tree spanning the ravine before widening on the other bank, gradually rising to a flat clearing of soft pine needles, set like a blanket before a semicircle of four modest pine trees. Crazy Legs stopped at the brink of the clearing, fumbling inside the pockets of his hurricane jacket as if in search of something. Mick wandered into the center of the clearing.
Don't tell me you forgot it.
No, I got it,
the skinny boy said as he pulled out a single key on a string. He sank to his knees and brushed the pine needle bed aside, uncovering the edge of a plywood board. Tracing the edge with his fingers, he located a brass padlock clasped to a rusty latch and unlocked it with the key before removing it and tossing it aside. He brushed the dirt from the small brass handle beside the latch and flipped a plywood door over, revealing a square hatchway leading into a black hole underground.
I knew you were good for something.
Mick knelt and peered into the darkness.
Give me your flashlight.
I thought you brought one,
Crazy Legs said. Mick shook his head in exasperation. He sat on the edge of the hatchway and dangled his feet into the dark hole, swinging a foot about as if wading in a pool. After a moment, he lifted the foot up to reveal the first rung of a rope ladder dangling from the toe of a sneaker. Grabbing the top rung for support, he set his feet upon the lower rungs and then swiftly descended to a plywood floor 10 feet down into the darkness. He struck a flame with a cigarette lighter to reveal a small wooden table to his right with an oil lamp set upon it. After removing the glass chimney from the lamp, he set the flame to the wick and the hazy orange glow spread throughout the pit, chasing back the shadows. He adjusted the burner and lit a cigarette off the flame, replacing the glass chimney onto the base of the lamp as Crazy Legs dropped to the floor beside him.
Get the other one,
he said, flipping the lighter to his friend. Crazy Legs waved his hand in front of his face.
Do you have to smoke in here? It's gonna stink for a week now.
He crossed the room and stepped upon a carpeted platform at the opposite end, where another oil lamp stood on a wooden stand set in the corner of the fort. Moments later, a bright flame burned in the second lamp, driving the lingering shadows farther into the corners of the pit, while he snapped the lighter shut and tossed it across the room to his friend. The underground fort was little more than a rectangular hole, with a plywood ceiling and thinly paneled walls, dry and secluded housing for an assembly of chairs within. An old brown sofa lined the short wall to the left of the hatchway, and a raised platform across the room supported a wooden tripod with a stack of charcoal sketches on white poster boards. Halfway down the long wall, an open sheet metal box was embedded in the plywood wall, with a 4-inch-wide aluminum pipe boring up through the dirt for ventilation to the surface. To the right of the makeshift fireplace, a pair of yellow skis leaned against the paneling with their bindings facing out and tips pointing up. Crazy Legs ran his finger gently along one of the skis' edges.
You didn't get rid of these yet?
I had a deal, but it fell through,
Mick said, clearly agitated by the question. He drew a long drag from his cigarette and exhaled.
Those are good skis. I ain't gonna sell them just for the sake of selling them. I'm sure Jeff would agree.
We'll see. We'll see what he says about your gun, too.
Mick shrugged.
What about it?
Ever since you got it, you've been strutting around like you're Clint Eastwood or something.
What should I do? Give it back to Curly?
Well, you don't gotta carry it everywhere, do you?
It won't do me any good at home. I could have been shot yesterday just going out for lunch. I ain't taking any more chances.
Crazy Legs sighed.
Great. Now we got two idiots running around with guns.
The fort darkened a shade as a pair of legs dropped through the overhead hatchway. A moment later, TJ climbed down the rope ladder and jumped to the floor, his rusty brown hair bobbing as he landed.
Hey guys, where's Jeff?
I don't know,
Crazy Legs said.
You just said to meet him here.
Axel descended the ladder next and dropped to TJ's side.
Hey, what's up with the pool hall? Last night, Otto told us that the Hurricanes are persona non grata now.
Mick pointed a thumb at Crazy Legs.
Nimrod here decided to run an obstacle course through the place yesterday. I'll talk to the old coot. He'll go belly up without us.
Crazy Legs laughed.
Mick makes it sound like field day. He forgot to mention I had half the tornadoes on my ass.
Denny climbed down to the floor and steadied the rope ladder for Brain to descend.
The tornadoes? Really? What happened?
Well, for one thing, I got this.
Mick pulled out the stolen pistol for everyone to see.
Awesome!
Axel exclaimed.
Can I hold it?
How'd you get it?
TJ asked. Mick held the gun out.
Curly tried to shoot me with it, but I turned the tables on his ass.
Axel spoke like a movie gangster from the corner of his mouth as he took the pistol and lifted it toward Denny.
Okay, Bugsy, your number's up.
Mick grabbed his wrist and stripped the gun away from him.
It ain't a toy, you know.
Axel pulled his hand back.
Ow! I was only kidding around.
Yeah, no shit. That's how friends get shot.
Crazy Legs laughed.
And if there's any shooting to do, Mick's gonna do it.
Denny stroked his thin mustache.
Better keep that thing under wraps, especially with Jeff's new girlfriend around.
Mick tucked the gun away again.
You mean that chick he met at the police station?
Denny shook his head.
No, the chick whose father runs the police station. You didn't see them together at the party?
I barely saw Jeff at the party.
Mick turned to Crazy Legs.
Why didn't you tell me about this?
Crazy Legs shrugged.
It's none of my business who Jeff goes out with. If he thinks he can handle it, it's fine with me.
Brain gazed up through the hatchway opening.
I think he's here.
The boys fell silent at the sound of scuffling feet on the plywood rooftop. Mick drew another drag on his cigarette and exhaled toward the fireplace in a half-hearted attempt to exhaust the smoke through the vent. Crazy Legs plopped down on the center cushion of the couch, while TJ and Axel took seats on either side of him. Denny settled into a wooden chair beside the fireplace, as Brain leaned back against the opposite wall, polishing his glasses with the tail of his shirt. Another pair of legs started down the rope ladder, and although everyone looked up in anticipation of Jeff's arrival, Bumbles dropped to the plywood floor instead, sporting a familiar freckled grin.
Hey guys, Jeff's right behind me.
Mick pointed to a sneaker fishing for the rope ladder overhead.
Don't stand there like a dork. Help him out.
I can do it, Jeff said from above. His foot caught the ladder and he cautiously descended four rungs until his entire torso was inside the fort. His bandaged left hand looped around the top rung of the ladder. He reached back through the hatchway with his right hand to grasp the inner handle of the hatchway door, pulling it shut before continuing down the ladder. When he was low enough, he jumped to the floor, but he landed awkwardly and stumbled back into the outstretched arms of Brain.
I got you, Jeff.
Thanks. The hurricane leader smiled humbly as he stood upright. He scanned the faces in the fort and asked, Where's Train?
Haven't seen him all day,
Crazy Leg said.
I thought he was with you.
Mick checked his cell phone.
I texted him earlier, but he never answered.
How's your hand, Jeff?
TJ asked. Jeff held out his bandaged paw for all to see. It hurts like hell. The doctor said I'm lucky there wasn't any major damage. He nodded toward his lieutenant. I think Mick ought to be the one who considers himself lucky. Crazy Legs smiled at Mick.
He's right, you know.
I don't know,
Mick said coolly.
I can take care of myself in the fight. I took on Curly all by myself yesterday, and I'm still here.
So I heard. Let me see it. Mick glowered at Crazy Legs before looking back to Jeff.
You gonna give it back?
I'll let you know. Come on, cough it up. Mick sucked one last drag from his cigarette before flicking the butt into the sheet metal firebox. He ponderously exhaled a cloud of gray smoke into the confines of the room as his keen eyes scanned the faces of his friends seated before him. Finally, he pulled the pistol from beneath his jacket and held it out at arm's length to his leader.
Wow,
Bumble said.
Where'd you get that?
It fell in my cereal box this morning,
Mick quipped. Jeff pinched the butt of the gun like he was holding a dirty diaper. You took this from Curly?
Like candy from a baby.
Jeff gripped the handle more firmly and strolled forward to step up onto the raised platform. He held up his bandaged hand for all to see. If this isn't enough proof how serious the tornadoes are, he lowered the hand and raised the pistol in the air with his good hand. Then this gun ought to be. Curly threatened to shoot Mick with it yesterday.
Hard to imagine, after all the good times we had together.
Jeff waited for the smattering of laughter to die down before continuing. You guys have always had my back and done whatever the gang needed you to do, but we've never faced something like this before. There's another gun out there, and we have no reason to think they won't try to use it. At first, I figured it'd be suicide fighting against two guns, but now that we have one, I'm not so sure. Maybe they won't risk using it now that we have one, or maybe it's crazy just taking that chance. Denny frowned.
So, what's your point?
No point, Jeff said. I just want to know what you think. Should we fight? Or what?
Or what? You mean like back out? We can't back out, Jeff. We gotta see their ugly faces at school every day.
You won't see much with a bullet in your head,
Crazy Legs said.
Although it might be an improvement.
Mick scowled at him.
The hurricanes don't back down from no one. The tornadoes think they're tough with guns. Well, we got one now. Let's see how tough they really are.
Okay. You stand in front.
Fine, I will. I ain't afraid of nobody. If we back out now, we ain't nothing but yellow.
Mick jabbed his thumb into his own chest.
And I ain't yellow.
Okay, I know where you two stand, Jeff turned to his friends. How about everyone else? Mick pulled out another cigarette and stuck it between his lips.
What is this, a vote?
Jeff turned indignantly to his lieutenant. I just want to know what they think. Is that all right with you? The hatchway door opened again before Mick could reply. Jeff squinted in the rush of daylight to see Train descending the rope ladder. His bodyguard pulled the hatch shut behind him before climbing to the floor and turning to face the ensemble.
Sorry I'm late.
Where you been, you big ox?
Mick asked.
We've been looking for you all day.
Around,
Train said quietly.
Like where?
Just around.
Train stepped to the couch and tapped Axel on the shoulder, deliberately avoiding eye contact with everyone else. Jeff scrutinized his bodyguard for a moment. Everything all right, buddy? Train looked up.
Huh? Yeah, Jeff, I'm fine. Other than the fact that Axel's in my seat.
He waited for Axel to move before sitting at the end of the sofa.
So what'd I miss?
Mick huffed.
We were just having a vote on whether to fight Saturday night.
He waved a hand mockingly in the air.
Who wants to fight? Let's see those hands, girls.
Jeff frowned at him before turning to the gang. You heard him. Who wants to fight? The befuddled Hurricanes glanced about each other's faces, waiting for someone else to speak first. Finally, TJ raised his hand.
I'll still fight. I ain't afraid of them.
Denny nodded.
Me neither.
Axel shrugged and raised his hand.
Mick's got a point. We can't back down.
Jeff looked about the room. Anyone else? Bumbles? Brain? Crazy Legs spoke up.
I don't think they want to fight. And neither do I.
I expected that from you, wimps,
Mick said.
But we still got the majority.
How do you figure? I only count four.
Well, Train's gonna fight after they trash his party. Right, Train?
Train stared down at his feet.
No, I don't think so.
What?
Mick cried out.
Sorry, Mick. I just don't think it's a good idea right now.
Mick lit the cigarette and exhaled the smoke slowly before turning to his leader.
Okay, Jeff. Looks like it's up to you. I can't believe my lion ears, but it's your decision anyway. So what do you say? Fight or flight?
Jeff shuffled his feet beneath the pressure of Mick's loaded question. Finally, he looked up to his friends. Look, I know you guys are nervous, but the tornadoes are bold and getting bolder. We gotta squash them now before things get out of hand. The fight's still on. Brain folded his arms and leaned back against the wall.
We're asking for trouble, Jeff. You know it.
We gotta stand strong. They won't just go away. Jeff held out the gun to Mick, who gladly accepted it and stuffed it under his belt again. Crazy Legs gasped.
You're giving it back to him?
Mick smiled.
He just did.
You should hold it, Jeff. At least we'd know it's in safe hands.
Jeff shook his head. I don't want it, and Mick's not going to use it without my say-so. Right, Mick? His lieutenant held up three fingers with his cigarette dangling from his lips.
Scout's honor, Jeff.
I mean it. Jeff turned to the rest of the Hurricanes. Look, I know Craig Matthews. If we show restraint, I think they will too. They might just be in over their heads on this. Maybe we can give them a way to save face and keep everyone safe. Crazy Legs sprang to his feet.
Are you kidding me? Safe? It's just a big game to you guys, isn't it?
The Hurricanes squirmed in their seats as their scout stormed toward the rope ladder, but Mick stepped forward and grabbed him by the shoulder.
Where do you think you're going?
Crazy Legs jerked himself free.
I don't want to hear this crap. I'm out of here.
Let him go, Jeff told Mick before narrowing his eyes on his skinny friend. Just be here Saturday night. Crazy Legs turned and scurried up the rope ladder, throwing the hatch open and climbing outside without another word. The others watched his departure in silence until the hatchway door slammed shut on them. Jeff glowered at his friends. Anyone else want to leave? Mick plopped into the vacant seat on the couch.
Don't worry, you'll be here. He's in this just like the rest of us. What's he gonna do? Hide in his basement for the next 6 months?
Jeff smirked at the notion. So I want everyone to be here at sunset on Saturday night. We'll go over the plan then.
You mean you don't have a plan yet?
Mick asked. Jeff glanced to the easel, which supported a hand-drawn poster board map of the two plazas. I got some ideas. I just haven't decided on them yet. Mick glanced about his friends with incredulity.
The fight's in 2 days, Jeff.
Yeah? So?
You're always the man with the plan. What's so different this time?
Give him a break,
Train said.
Look at his hand.
Nothing's different. We meet at sunset, we fight at 10. That's the plan. You need a dress rehearsal or something? The hurricane snickered, but Mick persisted.
Why can't we go over things tomorrow? We got nothing going on.
You don't. I do. Mick smiled with realization.
Oh, I get it. You got a date with Miss Law and Order.
Jeff frowned. Why? You want to be our chaperone?
You're out of your mind. There's a dozen chicks who will go out with you in a heartbeat, and you gotta pick the police chief's daughter.
I don't like them. I like her.
But what about the risk? Your timing couldn't be worse, dude.
Train sprang up from the couch.
Don't take this crap, Jeff. It's none of his business who you go out with.
He stormed to the rope ladder and began to pull himself up with his thick biceps.
Where are you going now?
Crazy Legs had the right idea.
Train pushed the hatchway door open and climbed out, letting it fall shut by its own weight.
Sheesh! What's eating him today?
Maybe it's you,
Axel said. Mick laughed.
What can I say? I bring out the best in my friends.
He turned back toward the hurricane leader.
How about you, Jeff? You gonna storm out too?
Jeff shook his head. I can do better than that. You guys get lost. Meeting's over.
But we just got here,
Bumble said. Just be here on time Saturday night. Now beat it. I got stuff to do. The hurricanes rose grudgingly from their seats and filed toward the rope ladder, grumbling among themselves as they climbed out. But Mick remained behind.
It's good to see you again, Jeff. Thanks for taking the hit from me at school the other day.
Jeff nodded before pointing a thumb to the skis against the wall. How much did you get for the other stuff?
900,
Mick replied coolly.
Best one yet. We got about 1700 in the account now.
He watched the last boy climb out of the hatchway, while Jeff flipped through a large pad of Denny's hand-drawn maps set up on the easel.
You want your bank book back?
You can hang on to it for now, Jeff said. Mick back to the rope ladder.
Okay, then. See you Saturday.
See ya. Jeff turned back to the map as Mick scaled the ladder. The hurricane lieutenant had just poked his head through the open hatchway when Jeff called out to him. Hey, Mick. Mick ducked his head back inside.
Yeah?
Remember what I said about the gun.
I already promised you, Jeff.
Good. I'm trusting you. One more thing.
What's that?
Get rid of these skis. I don't want them in here. We're done with break-ins.
You got it.
Mick clambered out the fort and slammed the hatchway door shut with a defiant flick of his wrist. Jeff glanced back with chagrin before turning to the charcoal maps in contemplation of a plan of attack for the impending fight on Saturday night. Jeff turned his midnight blue Camaro onto Hillside Drive for a third time, having already driven around the block twice without stopping at his destination, the Wellis residence. Cindy had assured him over the phone that her father would not be there, but as he approached the brown ranch dwelling to his left, he noted an unmarked gray cruiser still parked in the sloping driveway of her house. He tightened his grip on the steering wheel as he imagined Chief Wellis gunning him down like John Dillinger as he fled for his life across the front lawn. If ever there was a time to stand a girl up, this was it. But as he drove by the house, he saw the living room curtain separate to reveal her peeking out at him. He had been spotted. His doom was sealed. Jeff felt as if he might barf up a butterfly as he parked alongside the police vehicle and climbed out of his car. At the front of the driveway, a steep flight of cement steps led him up to the front door and a lighted doorbell button. He swallowed hard and reached for the button. But before he could depress it, the door popped open to reveal Cindy in a dark green sweater and black jeans. He backed away as she pushed the storm door open.
What took you so long?
He nodded to the cruiser in the driveway. You said your father wouldn't be here.
He isn't.
She stepped outside and pulled a white windbreaker onto her arms before shutting the front door.
He's at a fundraiser with my mom. They took her car.
Jeff stepped aside as she shut the front door. Fundraiser? What do you mean? She started down the steps.
He's running for county sheriff. That's why we moved here in the first place. You know, gain exposure, make connections, shore up his resume, all that crap.
He followed closely behind. So you thought that dating a hoodlum might help you get his attention back?
What? Jeff, I'm not 14 anymore.
He smirked. Sorry, I have a big mouth sometimes.
Well, shut it and get moving. We're gonna miss the movie.
He laughed. Okay. They climbed into the Camaro and he started the engine, glancing into the rearview mirror before backing up the driveway. Once they were on Hillside Drive, he shifted into gear and pulled away, lowering his visor to block the blinding sunset in his eyes. So, how long do we have tonight? She squinted and pulled her visor down.
Until midnight, but we should try to get back before them.
Let's shoot for 11. We don't want to come down on the wrong side of the law, he quipped. He spotted a curl of amusement upon her lips as he turned the car onto the main road and punched the gas. She's all right, he thought as they drove away. The girl's all right. Jeff slipped his arm around Cindy's waist as they stepped up to the sidewalk of the Madison Cineplex 12. Wow, this place is packed tonight. Cindy nestled closer to avoid the jostling crowd.
I think we left too late.
They passed through the glass doors to the carpeted lobby of the theater complex. Jeff stepped into line and gazed up at the box office board. Ah, look, it's sold out. Cindy studied the board for a moment.
Looks like everything good has already started.
What do you want to do?
Let's just go.
He returned to the glass doors and pushed one open for her. Sorry, I guess I blew it. She stepped outside and reached for his hand.
That's okay. We'll go another time.
They held hands as they crossed the driveway and entered the parking lot, but a cold breeze prompted Jeff to button his jacket as they neared his car. Cindy crossed to the passenger side and stood patiently while he fumbled for his keys. What time is it? She shivered.
7:45? Why?
Do you want to go home now?
I thought you'd never ask.
He winced. Ouch.
Well, what kind of a question is that? Do you want to go home now?
Of course not. He glanced back to the theater. I guess we could go see a bad movie. She leaned back against the trunk of the car.
I don't want to see a bad movie.
Jeff sighed and opened his door. Well, let's go. A few moments later, they sat in his idling Camaro waiting at a traffic light before leaving the cinema parking lot. He glanced over to her, sitting quietly with her hands folded in her lap. So, where do you want to go? He asked her.
I don't care. Anywhere.
The light turned green, but they continued to idle at it. You're a big help.
Well, you asked me out. It's up to you to figure out what to do.
A horn tooted behind them, stirring Jeff into a right-hand turn. He sighed and said, I guess you're right.
What's the matter?
I hate first dates. I never know whether to take the girl bowling, try to get her drunk, or run out of gas down some deserted street. She narrowed her eyes at him.
How about none of the above?
The only other option was to drop her off at 8:00, then go home and punch myself in the head.
How about talking to her and getting to know her?
Is that before or after we run out of gas? She smirked.
Before. You run out of gas and you're a walk-in buster.
All right. So what do you want to talk about? She scowled playfully.
Is this your first date, Jeff? I mean, your very first?
He laughed. Give me a break.
Well, you're not very romantic.
Silence fell over them as he drove away from the Cineplex and concentrated on the surrounding roads bustling with evening traffic. When the silence grew awkward, he glanced over to gauge her boredom, but she seemed content toying with the radio. Nevertheless, he squirmed in his seat at the bright lights of the cinema fading in his rearview mirror. We could just cruise around, he finally said. It's a beautiful night. She grabbed his arm.
Hey, I know a great spot where we can hang for a while.
Cool. Can we bowl there?
No, but we can run out of gas there.
She winked at him.
Only for a little while, though.
He glanced at the fuel gauge. I got half a tank. We shouldn't run out for too long. She snuggled closer to him.
Follow Dexter Road through the next intersection, then turn right on Portland Village Road. It's about a half mile past the light.
Jeff followed her instructions through a green light and soon slowed the car for the right-hand turn, switching on his high beams as they accelerated down a dark road devoid of streetlights. The beams sliced through the inky darkness, sporadically confronted by a reflective street sign or a brief wisp of fog. He gripped the steering wheel tighter. This is way more romantic. When do the grizzly bears attack? She squeezed his arm.
I didn't know bad old Jeff Hollister was afraid of the dark.
I'm not. I'd just like to see where I'm going.
Well, slow down. There's a sharp turn ahead.
Jeff tapped the brake pedal and turned the steering wheel to maneuver the imminent turn, a near right angle leading to the left. He shuddered at the sight of a simple steel guardrail preventing them from a steep plunge into a twisting ravine. A rising rock wall obscured a blind turn to the left that deterred him from edging the Camaro too far from the guardrail. Only after they completed the hairpin turn did he ease back into his seat, loosening his grip on the steering wheel and exhaling with relief as the dark mountainside pass receded in his rearview mirror. Wow, that's one hairy corner.
We call it Lifestar Lane.
She patted his knee reassuringly.
You wouldn't have been the first to wreck there, that's for sure.
That would have sucked. This car is my dad's legacy. She took a prolonged moment to behold the Camaro.
It's a beautiful car. What does your father do?
Jeff stared at the dark road ahead. Not much. He's dead.
Oh.
Cindy fell silent for a moment.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to pry.
He forced a smile. Nothing wrong with asking me about my family.
You don't mind talking about it?
He shrugged. Not much to say. I was only 10 when he died. He was walking to his car after work one night, just minding his own business, and some thugs stuck him with a knife for his wallet, like he didn't even matter.
That's terrible. Did the police arrest anyone?
Nope. Jeff's gaze fixated on the yellow line in the center of the black road. I guess it was a bad year for homicides, or maybe it was just a bad year for cops. Anyway, my mother tried to keep the pressure on them, but after a while it just seemed like no one gave a shit anymore. I think she just ran out of energy.
I'm sure it's been hard on her.
Jeff nodded. She picked up a second job bartending in Madison so she could keep the house. She says she's just hanging on until I graduate. I don't know what the big deal is. My brother Billy left for California 3 days after he graduated, and I ain't seen him since. I just wish she would let the whole thing go. I hardly even see her these days. We're not even really a family anymore. She laid her hand upon his knee.
I'm sorry. It must be lonely.
Jeff shrugged. The Hurricanes are my family now. They're always there when I need them. Just forgive me if I'm not fond of cops. I have my reasons.
Oh.
Cindy withdrew her hand to her lap. He mulled his words for a moment before patting her softly on the knee. Come on, let's not dwell on my past. I just want to have a good time tonight. We can still do that, can't we? She flashed her brown eyes up at him.
Sure we can, Jeff.
The road straightened at the bottom of the mountainside, leading them over a small stone bridge spanning a babbling stream. A roadside marker announced Portland Village, 2 miles ahead. But a mile along the way, a secondary road came into view beneath a dim streetlight. She pointed to the street marker on the corner.
Quarry Road. Turn here.
He steered onto the dark road. Are you taking me out to shoot me?
We'll see.
She leaned forward to see better out the front windshield, studying the passing foliage on the right side of the road. A mile down the road, she pointed to a thick oak tree with a faded brown sign nailed to it.
There it is.
Jeff braked the car to a hard stop, lurching them firmly against their seatbelts. He turned the steering wheel sharply to the right and slowly advanced the car into the mouth of the dirt road, where a wooden sign nailed to a thick tree read, West Shore Boat Launch. He squinted into the inky darkness. Really? You want to go down here?
What else can we do? We're miles from the nearest bowling alley.
Jeff grinned as he continued to drive along the gradual descent of the dirt road with the headlights slicing through the night. He scanned the road for imperfections that might damage his tires, but it was wide and firmly packed, as if to accommodate large trucks or heavy machinery. The density of the forest waned farther down the slope, and soon, gaps in the foliage revealed shining stars in the clear sky overhead. Finally, they came upon a split in the road with two white signs nailed to a pine tree in the center of the fork. One sign read, Boat Launch, directing them to the right, and the other sign read, Portland Mining Company, pointing to the left. Jeff braked the car to a halt at the fork and peered down the road to the left, captivated by the glimmer of a tall metal structure running through the woods a quarter mile up the road. What is that? He asked, with his eyes fixed upon the shiny object.
Oh, you don't want to go down there.
He laughed. Why? Are there ghosts or something?
No, Jeff, it's just...
He turned the steering wheel sharply to the left and hit the gas, driving up the left leg of the forked road until the towering silver fence forced him to a stop. Wow! Look at the size of that thing, he said. He shifted the car into park and opened his door, leaving the engine running and the headlights on as he started out of the car. She reached over and grabbed his arm.
Jeff, please.
Her reaction startled him. Relax, I just want to check it out. He pulled away from her and continued out of the car, gazing up at the fence as he meandered toward it. Cindy opened her door and stepped out of the car.
Be careful, Jeff. It's electric.
Electric? Really? Jeff glanced to the edge of the headlight beams, where warning placards read, Keep out and no trespassing. He stepped up close to the silver metal mesh and cocked an ear toward the fence before reaching out and grabbing the metal mesh with both hands. Yah! He screamed with his arms shaking violently. Cindy rushed forward to help him.
Jeff!
He laughed and shook the fence with both hands. Ha! It's not even on! She backhanded him on the shoulder.
You jerk!
He slipped an arm around her waist and pulled her toward the fence. Want to explore the other side? She resisted his tugging.
No, I don't want to.
Come on, where's your sense of adventure? Cindy stepped back defiantly.
No.
He whirled about for an explanation, but she looked away with her arms crossed. So he threw his arms up in the air and stormed past her. Well, forget it then. I don't want to go either. She followed him back to the Camaro.
Jeff, don't be mad.
He stopped at his car door and waited for her to reach her side of the car. I'm not mad. I'm just curious. A fence like that out here in the middle of nowhere? They climbed back into the car.
This isn't the middle of nowhere. This is where I grew up.
Jeff shifted into reverse and backed the car to the fork. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I'm just saying, there's probably more bears than people out here. I mean, what are we even doing out here? He shifted into gear again and drove forward down the right leg of the fork, only to hit the brakes 100 feet ahead for a fallen sapling spanning the road. Aw, damn. Now what?
We could walk. It's just up ahead.
Are you sure? It looks spooky dark out there, he quipped.
Well, take your flashlight.
She reached up and pulled an ivory handle from a sheath strapped to his sun visor, but her mouth dropped open as she beheld a 4-inch hunting knife in her hand.
Oops, my mistake.
Jeff took the knife from her and returned it to its sheath. Probably won't need that, unless we find a grizzly bear.
Or one finds us.
He flipped the high beams on and off, but neither setting seemed particularly effective viewing the road beyond the fallen tree. Is there any other way down this road? She shook her head and popped her door open again.
Come on.
She shut the door and walked down the lighted path to the fallen tree, straddling it before turning back to the Camaro and shielding her eyes from the headlights.
Come on, Slowpoke!
She called before continuing down the road on the other side of the fallen tree. Jeff frowned. He shut off the engine and headlights before climbing out of the car and following her down the dirt road now solely lit by bright moonlight. Ahead, the dirt road cleared the last of the trees before dipping gently toward the water, where a star-splotched sky draped Cindy's shoulders like a shawl. At the end of the dirt road, she stepped upon a wooden dock jutting out over the shimmering lake and walked to the edge, where she sat down with her feet dangling over the water. He stepped up behind her, and she tugged at his hand until he sat down beside her.
You asked me why I brought you here. I brought you here for this?
She pointed an open hand to the panorama of Almond Lake, serene like glass beneath their feet, yet refracting the moonlight with minute ripples stretching out across the waters before them. The nighttime horizon sparkled with so many stars, Jeff could not discern familiar constellations, while the warm yellow glow of cottage lights glimmered through the maples and pines on the southern shore to their right. He could even smell a whiff of cherry wood wafting along a breeze from a cottage chimney to the right.
And for this?
She leaned close and kissed him on the cheek, her eyelashes as soft as caterpillar feet upon his skin. His heartbeat thumped in his ears as he kissed her lips, and he wondered how he could have been angry with such a beautiful girl who chose to share a cherished place with him. It's a beautiful lake. I wish it were mine. She laughed.
You can't own a whole lake.
Why can't I? He pointed to a towering rock formation on the northern shore. I'd put a diving board on that cliff and make double reverse flips into the water all day long. She slid an arm behind him and drew closer.
Sounds like an ambulance ride to me.
He continued to marvel at the landscape, noting the lack of lights for a lengthy portion of the northern shore. Is that all part of the mines? She nodded.
The local kids used to like playing in there after hours. One day a kid fell and got hurt pretty bad. He almost died. It was scary. His parents sued the owner and won, so the company put up the fence to keep other kids from climbing over.
No, they'd just electrocute themselves instead.
It's not that strong, dummy. Just enough to keep someone from climbing over it.
He eyed her with playful suspicion. How do you know all this?
The owner knows my dad. He was putting a lot of pressure on the police to keep the kids out, but Portland doesn't have the people for that. Then the environmentalists started complaining about runoff into the lake, and he just kind of threw his hands up in the air and walked away. I don't think they even opened up this year with all the legal issues they were having.
Jeff pointed to the lights shining the shore to their right. Is that where you used to live?
No, we didn't live on the lake.
She pointed toward a dark patch on the distant shoreline.
My grandparents own a cottage over there. We still keep our boat in their boathouse.
You mean, like a motorboat? Cool. I've never been on a motorboat before.
Wow, really? I practically lived on ours last summer. I'd go skiing with my friends almost every day. Shannon taught me how to ski barefoot last summer. That was the best.
You must miss living here. She cast her eyes downward.
Well, yeah. I wanted to finish my senior year in Portland. I had to leave all my friends behind.
Look at the bright side. At least you got to meet me. She patted his knee.
Remind me to thank my dad for that when we get home.
He slipped an arm around her waist and pulled her closer. You got to realize something, Cindy. People like your father, they don't care about what you or I want. You're just a possession to him, and I'm just a stepping stone to his next promotion. Might as well accept it. Cindy sighed.
My father isn't all that bad. He's just got a job to do.
I'm just saying maybe he ought to worry less about high school kids and worry more about real crooks.
Oh, right. Like you guys never broke the law.
Jeff shrugged. I never said we were choir boys. All we're trying to do is break up the monotony in that stupid town. But every time we turn around these days, another cop is breathing down our necks. Sure, we get rowdy sometimes, but we're just letting off energy.
Keg parties and rumbles are one thing, Jeff. Burglary is something completely different.
He drew away from her. The only thing people in Salisbury care about is trimming their lawns, washing their cars, and making sure their kids get to the soccer game on time. So if someone takes away some of their toys and gives them a taste of the real world, maybe that ain't such a bad thing.
I see. So you're Robin Hood.
No, not Robin Hood. Jeff felt rankled. Go ahead. Make fun. I'm not asking for your approval. She slid beside him and rested her head on his shoulder.
I'm not making fun. I'm worried about you. I can't help it after everything that's happened this week.
Everything's under control. I know what I'm doing.
And the guns?
She blurted out. I don't have any guns. I was with you, remember?
But look what the tornadoes did to you. Where would your friend Mick be if you hadn't gotten in the way? If your enemies are willing to go that far, what else will they do?
I'm not afraid of them. If I was afraid of the tornadoes, the hurricanes wouldn't even exist.
How so?
The tornadoes were here first, wearing their colors around school and bullying people they didn't like. They were just a bunch of arrogant assholes. So I started the hurricanes with Mick and Crazy Legs and Train. It took a lot of time and a whole lot of fighting, but we recruited the rest of the gang along the way, and we finally put the tornadoes back in their place. We beat them at their own game, and now we beat them every time. He held out his bandaged hand. Looks like it's time for another lesson.
What do you mean?
She looked into his eyes.
You're going to fight, aren't you? Jeff, it's too dangerous.
Look what they did to me. Look what they did to you at the party. Somebody has to pay.
My toenail isn't worth getting shot over, and you should just be thankful you're alive.
He frowned. So just call it off? How's it going to look if the hurricanes don't show up for their own fight?
Who cares how it looks? Just skip the whole thing.
Yeah? And then what? What happens at school Monday morning? Should we just hide in our lockers? The tornadoes ain't going to just go away.
There's got to be another way. Maybe my father can...
Your father? Jeff sensed the conversation getting away from him, so he drew a deep breath and exhaled. Look, it's too late to start second-guessing now. I was hoping we could forget about that stuff tonight and concentrate on other things. He wrapped his arm behind her again. Like you and me. She lay back against him.
I'm scared, Jeff. I'm just getting to know you, and now...
He stroked her hair gently. Everything's gonna be just fine. We're the Hurricanes. We're quicker than they are, we're stronger than they are, and we're smarter than they are. And you know why I'm the leader?
Enlighten me,
she said without looking up. I think fast, I stay in control, and I find a way to win. I'm probably a little lucky too, but don't tell anyone I said that. She tapped on his bandage.
Looks like your luck is running a little thin lately.
He held up the injured hand. This is just motivation. The tornadoes are going to be sorry they messed with the likes of me.
Your reputation is rivaled only by your ego.
It's not ego. It's self-confidence. She slapped his knee.
I'm kidding, Jeff. You don't have to tell me about the notorious Jeff Hollister. On my first day at Salisbury High, the girls were lining up to tell me all about you.
Ha! Notice I'm not with any of them tonight.
No, you're here with me. Why?
I don't know. I don't like being someone's badge of honor. You're different. That stuff doesn't matter to you. I haven't completely figured out why just yet. Cindy rested her head on his shoulder.
Maybe I think you're just a cute guy and fun to be with.
Jeff laughed. Fun to be with? I'm a gang leader. She entangled their fingers together.
Well, maybe there's more to it than that. And maybe I'll tell you about it when I figure it out myself. For now, let's just enjoy tonight, okay? Tomorrow we'll be here soon enough.
He kissed her on the top of her head and swayed her body in his arms as the calm lake water lapped against the dock posts. Her motives seemed as murky as the Milky Way overhead. But for the moment, he felt content to accept her proposal to enjoy a solitary moment in time and let the troubles of tomorrow fall where they may. Jeff turned the Camaro onto Hillside Drive again before nudging Cindy with his elbow. Wake up, we're almost there. She lifted her head off his arm.
I wasn't sleeping.
He slowed the car at her driveway, glancing at the blue digits of the radio clock before pulling in. 10 minutes ahead of schedule. Not bad for a delinquent. She sat up straight and peered at the driveway ahead.
We're in luck. My parents aren't home yet.
He pulled alongside the parked gray cruiser and shut the engine off. Sooner or later, you'll have to tell your father about me. She pecked him on the cheek.
After the election. He's bouncing off the walls as it is.
He raised an eyebrow. I hope that wasn't your goodnight kiss. She opened the car door.
Walk me up the steps.
Okay. Jeff glimpsed at the rearview mirror under the glare of the dome light. He shut off the headlights and stepped out of the Camaro and joined her at the front of the car, casting an uneasy eye at the quiet street behind them before following her up the steep cement steps. She stopped at the front door and slipped her arms around his waist.
Tonight was better than being hit by a brick.
Good to know. I was worried. He drew her near and closed his eyes, pressing his lips to hers as she eased back against his sturdy forearm. But they kissed only for a moment before he sensed a bright light upon his eyelids. He popped an eye open to see headlights approaching the house, then eased his embrace and backed away until only their fingertips touched. I'd better go.
Call me.
He nodded and hurried down the steps as the headlights neared the driveway. Fumbling with his keys, he opened the door and climbed back into the Camaro, starting the engine, only to be blocked in as a white sedan turned in the driveway behind him. Cindy dashed down the steps toward the driveway as Jeff lowered his window halfway, glaring in his sideview mirror at a car door opening behind the bright headlights.
Let me handle this,
she told him as she rushed past his window.
Dad, you're home early!
Jeff watched the reflection of Cindy confronting her father in the driveway.
What's going on, Cindy?
The chief's voice boomed.
Whose car is this?
A friend's. We went to a movie.
Jeff sat motionless, hoping Cindy would resolve everything, but knowing things were turning for the worse. A knuckle rapped against the side window glass, and he lowered the window to see the police chief in a black jacket and tie, standing outside his car. The chief bent forward to peer inside with his nostrils flaring.
Why are you on my property?
Jeff fidgeted with the steering wheel. We went to...
Yeah, I heard. Another movie. Who gave you permission to go out with my daughter?
Jeff drew a deep breath as he struggled to remain calm. He spotted Cindy's mother in his rearview mirror, cutting across the headlight beams in a long black dress. Look, no harm, no foul, Mr. Wellis. She's home safe and sound. Do you mind backing up so I can leave? I'm kind of tired. Chief Wellis placed his hands on the roof of the Camaro and leaned in close to Jeff.
Oh, you're kind of tired, huh? Tell you what, I'll get my men to come by and check you out. Go over your documents, check out your car, the whole nine yards. If everything's in order, maybe you'll be home by daybreak.
Jeff lowered the window down the rest of the way and stuck his face an inch away from the chief's. Why are you harassing me? I haven't done anything wrong. Cindy tugged at her father's sleeve.
Daddy, leave him alone.
Mrs. Wellis stepped forward, her scarlet shawl flapping in the cool breeze.
Matt, what's going on?
Chief Wellis pointed at the car.
Jeff Hollister is in our driveway.
Daddy, please! Leave him alone!
Mrs. Wellis pressed her hand against her husband's chest.
Matt, let him go. It's late.
Call Bob Hurst,
the chief told her.
Tell him to come right away. Tell him to send backup.
Backup? Really? You've got me pinned in. Chief Wellis pointed a finger at Cindy.
She's off limits to you, Hollister. Got it? Off limits.
Dad!
Cindy objected.
Get upstairs. I'll deal with you later.
Cindy whirled about and stomped up the front steps with her mother trailing closely behind. Jeff watched them enter the house before turning back to her father. Get out of my way, Chief. I'm not going to say it again. The chief shook his head.
Sorry, Hollister. We're going to have to do this the hard way.
Jeff watched Cindy shut the front door. My thoughts exactly. He shifted into first gear and drove forward, stopping just inches from the garage door as the chief looked on with curiosity. Cutting the steering wheel sharply to the left, Jeff shifted into reverse and hit the gas, nearly grazing the idle gray cruiser and forcing Chief Wellis to jump for his safety. The chief chased after him as he backed over the edge of the driveway and onto the front lawn, skidding to a halt on the grass. He waved to Cindy, peering out the living room window at him. Then he cut the steering wheel the other way and hit the gas, slinging a wide arc of soft sod against the front of the house. Jeff straightened the wheel and the car lurched forward, sailing off the curb and bouncing on the pavement of Hillside Drive as the chief ran after him, cursing and shaking a fist in the air.
Damn you, Hollister!
Racing away from the Wellis residence, Jeff wondered for a moment if his friends were right. Maybe he was crazy for dating the daughter of the police chief. The sentiment didn't last long, however, for the only thought on his mind as he drove back to his neighborhood was when he would see her again.